true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
You're back, Desmond.
It's crazy how long it's been.
You know what? We should not talk about it because we're going to talk about it in one.
No, I think so. Today's episode is talking with Desmond the whole time.
Yeah.
Good. I just want to be clear. I want to make sure we're all on the same page.
Desmond, you're here.
I am. It's so, I can't tell you how, like, I mean, it's awesome to be here. But like when I texted you, what, 3 months ago now and said like, hey, is it cool, like, if I, you know, jump in when I can and not when I'm at, is that okay? And you're like, yeah, you know, when you're there, it's great. When you're not, we can handle it. And then, like, everything just went, like, we just could not, like, even today, I had another appointment. Every time that I would say, yes, I will be there on Tuesday at 10, within an hour, I would get a call from someone else saying, hey, I can squeeze you in, but only at Tuesday on 10. And it fucking happened again today. I had to tell the dentist to fuck off. Like, we were on the cancel list for the dentist. And right after we solidified our recording time yesterday, they called me and said, we have a cancellation. We can squeeze you in tomorrow at 10:30. And I was like, nope,
can't do that one.
I liked when you said you told the dentist to fuck off. I wish that was how that went.
Episode title, telling the dentist to fuck off.
We can fit you in at 10:30. Fuck off.
I'm an anti-dentite.
Damn.
Are you?
No.
How did the receptionist respond to that?
Brenda is, shout out to Brenda. Brenda's awesome.
Telling the dentist to fuck off, but shout out to Brenda.
Yeah. She's not the dentist. She's the hygienist.
You know, I learned yesterday, apropos of dental talks, that A, if you want to make a lot of money, be a dentist. Because my dad has his, I don't even know how to explain this. His institute that he's the CEO of in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is merging with New York Medical Hospital, some hospital in New York, which is like 2 miles south of where I live, which is really surreal. But one of the things they're doing in order to make this merger work, the point being, like, my dad's looking for a way to retire. So he needs somebody else to, like, there needs to be money coming in that isn't made by his efforts. So their thing that they're doing is, in the merger, building a dental school on the land, my dad's facility in Albuquerque. You know the area, Cass, over there in,
yep,
the Los Alamos area. Anyway, and I said, why a dental school? And he was like, you would not believe how much money dental schools make. And they're a hospital, so it made sense.
Right. Dental schools make. Interesting.
I know. So we got into talking about dental schools are A, expensive. And I it's like maybe 4 years and you're paying 65 to 85 grand a year to go. And then, so the schools make a lot of money and it doesn't cost a lot to teach it. Once you're set up, you just kind of repeat, rinse, repeat. And then dentists, he was like, because the dental insurance industry is a little fucked. And you'll notice, I'm sure, like for yourself, like you may have insurance, but not dental insurance because it's not required. So, and it's not life or death, really, sort of, kind of, except for when it is, that people, when your tooth is fucked, you just pay. You'll just pay whatever because, you might not have dental insurance. So dentists can charge whatever the fuck they want. And he was like, all these, we've been doing the research and we're like, it was either going to be this kind of hospital or a vet school or this thing. And then dental was the number one moneymaker.
Wow. So will he be attached to some postgraduate dentist office as well to recoup some of those benefits, or just teach them and get them out the door?
Yeah. Does he get a percentage of their career earnings?
So it's an MLM now.
Absolutely.
Dental school is a multi-level marketing scam.
Well, I guess too, because yeah, so it costs 80 grand a year, but then when you don't pay it off for 15 years, you end up making 150 grand off of that.
That's for real.
That person. So
for real.
Go dad.
Yeah. He's making some moves that work for him. So, okay. You weren't here with us and we survived. We did our jobs. but we have missed you. Can you tell the people, all the throngs?
Where the hell have you been?
All the throngs of listeners. The clamoring fans. Where have you been?
The Desmond stands. Where are the Desmond stands?
Just dadding it up is the short version. You know, it's just like, and you know, I started talking to my therapist about it in like March. Like, okay, summer's coming. I don't want to be taken by surprise. It always throws off my schedule. We always get in a good school schedule and then summer comes and throws it off and I get frustrated. So like I've been talking to him forever. And then, so I was kind of prepared, like, okay, school's going to get out, you know, things are going to get fucked up, but I'm ready for it. But like, as usual with parenting, you can never get out in front of it. So the teen got out of military school in mid-May and we had to go pick him up. So like, while I was like looking at little man, like, okay, he's going to get out of first grade June 7th. That was like my day that I was prepared for, but I didn't backtrack enough. So we went to, first of all.
Buckle in.
Kelly snapped her ACL.
Oh, fuck.
And she did that. We were playing Monkey in the Middle with Cormac. And like, if you were watching it, nothing. Like, it's not like, oh, yeah, that definitely snapped her ACL. Like, it was just her just kind of sidestepping and she went down. And so it just felt like a really bad sprain. And then after 10 days, she finally went to the doctor and they're like, yeah, it's a clean break.
I hate the word snap. It hurts my body. Oh, God, I'm so sorry for her.
Oh, it's, yeah, terribles.
And that's a ligament on the back of the leg.
It's behind your knee bone, kind of stretch.
Oh, is it bridging like the thigh and the?
Yeah. And
the, it goes behind the knee bone, attaching between the thigh and the calf.
Your ACL is on the front. Your NCL is on the back.
Ugh.
And so since she's, you know, still a spry young lady, they took it. So they take the ligament from her own thigh.
Replace it
because borrowing parts.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a double surgery. So that was, and when you talk to people who have ACL surgery, their first response is, oh, it's fine. Look at me. I'm 100%. Like, I survived it. It's so great. It's, you know, modern technology is great. Oh, that first week was really tough. Oh, the day after, and then they slowly start to whittle it down and remember what it was actually like. And like the first week after ACL surgery, you're out. You're bedridden for the most part. So she gets that about 10 days before we have to go drive down to Carlsbad to pick up Will. So we drive down to Carlsbad.
And Will is the person you refer to as the teen.
The teen, yes. Cormac is little man. Will is the teen.
Okay.
So we drove down. And so since we usually try to power through because as everyone knows, it's a shitty drive from here to LA / Carlsbad.
Which is really San Diego, right?
Yeah. Carlsbad is basically San Diego.
Yeah. It's such a shitty drive because like time wise, LA is like halfway. Distance wise, LA is like 7/10 of the way. But time wise, it just screeches it to a halt. So knowing that Kelly was going to need extra rest, we took 101 and just took our time, stayed in Santa Barbara, you know, went down.
So instead you got car sick because of the wavy nature of 101.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you didn't take one. I guess that's the difference.
Not one. Yeah, 101.
We're going to talk about highways for those of you who are listening from all over the country. We're just going to talk about the variety of highways in California.
So one is a nice scenic route that takes forever, but you get to see the ocean. 101 is a little bit faster, a little less scenic. I-5 is much faster. Shit scene.
Which somebody recently told me this was an offensive name, so I want to acknowledge that, but you drive by Kauschwitz.
Yeah, so people, yeah, it's a minimization of a real thing that is really awful.
No, I understand. It's also funny. Let's be real.
It's a good pun.
Yeah, but, it's a good pun.
But it's based on some intense suffering. The vegans in our life would be like, no, that's appropriate.
The cows are suffering.
That's what I'm saying.
The cows are being slaughtered at Kauschwitz, so I think it's inappropriate.
Can we call it Cowmageddon? Not quite the same.
That's fun. I like that.
It's a little less specific.
Okay, so this all happened, then you went down there, and then other things happened, and that's why you haven't been here?
Yeah, and then, so yeah, so long, long, long story short. So yeah, that's when my summer began mid-May when we drove down, spent a week in Carlsbad. We have some friends there, and then drove back, and then, you know, the end of school year, there's a lot of stuff going on, and then school got out, big soccer tournament, and all this time I'm keeping up with my releases, as you guys know. Like I've been basically absent from all recordings that I'm not on, and
but we never missed a release. Somehow you squeezed them in.
Never missed a release. You guys came up with a great idea with the Katie Church. We got real close there with the Katie Church, because yeah, that was
Ashley. Good move. Good call.
Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you're back. We had the idea that, ooh, it's 2/22 and the twos are all about connection, community, love, and togetherness. So here we are, connected and communal again.
Well, and in California, it's 1/1/22.
Right now?
It's 11/22 for us, which is 1/1/22. I don't know what that means.
Oh, I love it. That's even better. Magic in the numbers. And so we wanted to kind of do a Desmond episode just to welcome you back and be like, maybe we get in your records. Maybe we bring some healing to something that wants healing brought to it for you. Maybe we ask some questions. But I feel like, what do you guys think about? We check in. Let's each check in. And then we'll do the Desmond time. How does that sound?
Great.
Sounds good. This is kind of a check-in for everybody.
Okay.
Have you seen Everything Everywhere All the Time?
Oh, haven't you been listening to the episodes you've been editing?
I have, but it's been 2 weeks since I've heard her speak.
Katie still hasn't seen it.
I can't, you know what? I can't answer the question because I will get immediately, instantaneously murdered by Rami.
By all of us, really, to be frank.
I know. I'm just teasing because for a minute, Rami lived inside of my colon about it. And I appreciated it because I want to see it. I just haven't. I have no real reason. I'm not even in resistance. I just haven't.
You know what Katie's going to do when she sees it, right, Cassidy?
Explode.
She's going to go, yeah.
They didn't discover anything new.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, they just put on the screen what I see all the time. Like, good for them.
So it's like that.
Well, it's about sort of a multiverse situation.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Multiple realities. It is very much similar to the folded.
Oh, the foldy in timey thing?
Yeah. Although each one is different slightly.
It's presented really, really well. The presentation is super cool. But I don't think I'm not so sure the information is going to blow your mind the way it opens up some people to a new concept of reality.
Okay, I'm writing this down that I have to put it in my calendar or it won't happen.
Good choice.
Yeah. Yes. So, Cassidy, you're directing this play.
Yeah.
I saw pictures where like you guys are on stage now. You're rehearsing on stage, or what's the deal?
Yeah, we open this weekend.
You opened?
We open this coming weekend. It's I'll just do a quick version of this whole last week, because since the last time we spoke, immediately after we spoke, I was given the information that I had probably been pretty significantly exposed to COVID. Someone I had hung out with came down with it, and I had been, you know, just kicking it like in a dining room right around my birthday. And so then I had to kind of go into immediate to protect my cast. I had to go, I mean, I was fine. And when I did the calculations, I was like, well, he came down with it on, and then I saw him on, so he probably wasn't, he had been exposed, but hadn't developed it by the time I hung out with him. So he probably wasn't expelling it until blah, 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 who cares? But still, I had to be like abundance of caution.
Yeah.
Because the moment an actual infection enters the cast and crew, you're just fucked.
Yep.
It shuts everything down.
Yep.
And so, like, I was just, like double masked in rehearsal, didn't even go near my actors for several days, just was like, good job over there. And I'm going to step outside to drink some water. You know, literally, I was just being crazy cautious. We test all the time, but tests are about 50% useful at this point, it seems like. It was a really stressful week. One person who was exposed to that exposure got it. Another person did not. So, and I did not. So like, you know, turns out I didn't. I've tested 100 times since then. I've never felt healthier, except for every morning I wake up with a headache, which is something we could talk about. And it freaks me out. As soon as I wake up, I'm like, I have a headache. I have COVID. And then the headache goes away.
Have you had COVID, Des?
No.
Huh.
Katie has. We're like the two in the whole world at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone around me is getting it, and like no one in my house has got it yet.
You gotta knock on that wood behind you.
And you got kids coming around.
Yeah, and we got a good old-fashioned cold. Like, who knew those were still a thing?
Yeah.
Like, Cormac's been sick for a couple of days, and we keep testing him, and no COVID. And I got whatever he's got, and no COVID. So
I like the idea that every time you mention one of your children's names, it's just a different name. Like, for some reason, I can't lock your kids' names into my head. So every time you say one, I'm like, Billy, John, Kevin, Cormac.
Shamrock.
Yeah. It's all new every time.
Shamrock. Well, because Will's real name is Kieran.
No, I can't.
Yeah.
Now we're all confused.
Yeah.
All right. So Cass.
I'll just blast through mine because anyway, it was a stressful week trying to stay cool with my cast, but we've maintained another cast member. His dad came down with it and he's staying with his dad, but he hadn't seen him for 4 or 5 days when it happened. So then he was like, he's also fine. Anyway, it's been a lot. There was a lot going on. And then we come out, we get to this theater and we're out on outside putting it on the stage at the winery. And that's, I go alternate days of, I am one day I can barely focus. I want to cry. I'm so like, I don't, how do I, cause I'm in fucking charge totally. Because the way, you know, it at some theater, like the stage manager's in charge during tech, my stage manager, who I want to say amazing and zero experience. So because of that, like you tell her to do something, she does it and then she figures out how to do it better. So that's fine. But you don't run a tech with no experience.
No, no. Nope.
You take the notes and do the job. But I'm running the tech, which I also have very little experience doing. It's been years, you know? So kind of stressful.
For the listener is really high pressure because you're having to set every single light where it needs to be. You're running all sound. You're getting the actors where they need to be. You have to make it all work. And it's like moment by moment, very slow, very tedious. And usually the stage manager runs it. So anyway.
Yeah. And this show, we have the added bonus of having a billion costumes and quick changes. And another thing, inexperienced, trying their best, but an inexperienced dresser crew. So trying to teach them how to like do quick changes and anticipate and like, then we also have a person moving all the furniture over to the next place so that the actor can grab it when they need to, you know, because the actors do all the scene changes, but they do them from on stage. It's a lot. It's a lot. And then as of today, it's going to be 104 degrees.
Oh,
wow.
It'll get down to about 99 by the time we are supposed to do our dress rehearsal outdoors with no shade. So we will not be doing a dress rehearsal today. Because there's no way. It's dangerous.
Is there shade?
Not available to do the show in, and I wouldn't want to anyway. It'd still be too hot. So we're making a heat plan and, you know, might even be canceling a preview so that we can sort of kick the can down the road one day, do work today, but in an air-conditioned space that isn't the set and not have everything. But I don't want anybody dying. Literally, it could happen.
Oh, of course.
It is so hot today. I can't even. I don't even know. So, but actually that making that plan just calmed me right the fuck down.
That's cool.
Because I'm just like, yeah, we're just going to rehearse. And then by, you know, opening, we'll have a show.
Yeah.
It'll be what it'll be.
It'll always be a thing.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my week. Oh, but what I was going to say is I was alternating days of being like, I can barely think and I want to cry. And then the next day, like, bam, I am on that shit. Like, and I'm laughing and I'm enjoying it. And I'm like, good. Now you go over there, move this, pick that up. Great job. Excellent. Oh my God, that looks great. Oh, I love you. You guys are the best. I love my cast. They bring me to tears every day when I talk about them because they're so awesome. But, and then the next day, I can't think. I'm like, so we're going to, right. We need to take it from, what's your line? It's.
Right. And you have not had COVID.
And I don't have COVID fog.
This is not COVID fog.
It was weird. Like every other day, like, and today's the alternate day of that. And I'm back on, like my brain is firing.
Huh.
So that's interesting.
Wild.
So do you have so many inexperienced crews because they all had to go out and get construction jobs thanks to COVID?
Partially. I mean, I am working in a theater that's sort of middle, lower middle in terms of like got it together. And this is their first show back. And so they have, you know, everybody that they did have is gone.
Yeah.
Every theater is having a hell of a time hiring anybody that's not an actor. Crew are not available. Carpenter. Shows are being canceled because they can't hire a carpenter.
Wow.
Help me understand this, because like I just saw a show out here at this theater out here, and the AD was telling, the artistic director was telling me, he just stage managed his own show because he couldn't hire, he has a full equity contracted paid stage manager jobs. He's like, this stage manager would have made more than I make on the show as the director.
Yeah.
And he can't get anyone to come out there and do it. Why?
Yeah. And this is a theater that Rami's working at that is really well funded, and they
no not that theater.
Oh, this is different. But they also had a similar thing where they had to hire, they ended up hiring very inexperienced crew,
right,
for this top flight theater that's got the money. You know, they've treated their actors really well and housed them and paid them out and all the things.
What's the reason?
Everything changed and people started going, wait, why am I doing that? Why am I letting myself be abused for no money?
I mean, that makes a ton of sense to me. I am on that train, you know, but I don't, I guess I have always felt like stage managers are the one person on set who's, or in rehearsal, who's like making
actual okay money. Yeah.
They don't have to learn the lines and put the shit on their body and run around and sweat and say the fucking words. They call the show. Q1, go.
I don't know.
Weird. I just find it really interesting and kind of like baffling, but I guess maybe it's similar to, I'm just trying to theorize. I don't know.
Is it similar to like the supply chain problem where it's just everything, the supply chain of human, which is a terrible phrase. I'm never going to use that again. I'd like to cancel that idea.
Well, how you can't hire anyone to work in a restaurant or retail right now. But that makes sense to me because they're underpaid.
Right.
And those people are like, fuck you. But what about, but I don't think stage managers are underpaid, or am I wrong?
Depends on the theater.
Right.
I mean, they're only, they're paid a little more than actors, but the like for union, there's like, if actors are making $650 a week, stage managers making $675.
Okay.
Or $690 or something, but it's not like $100 more a week. It's $50 more a week and twice the work.
That explains some of it then. Twice the work?
Well,
how so?
I mean, depends on how you look at the work, because the stage manager, you know, has to get there early and leave late and type up notes, and they never get to leave. Like hours wise, it's way more.
I guess you have to really love that work, which is like the, what you're loving is like management-y, organizational, mid-level admin stuff. So you can get paid a real salary doing management, mid-level admin at Google.
Right.
You know, maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, I've heard from so many people that there's just, they can't keep and hire, they can't hire and keep people. But a lot of those that I hear from are, you know, secondhand are like, well, that's because you're not prioritizing those humans in your, either not paying them well enough or not treating them well enough, or a combination of the two.
I see. That makes sense. Well,
Katie, tell us what's going on in your life.
Okay. So that was a perfect segue. I was going to say, so the first thing I have to report is anybody in the tri-state area who has a vehicle or access to a train or bus or camel or a dragon, you need to go now to the Two Rivers Theater in New Jersey, Red Bank, New Jersey, and see The Three Sisters.
Here's what's going to happen. I'm just letting you know. This episode's going to come out this Saturday.
I know.
So you need to hear it at noon and get on a train that day, because that'll be their closing performance.
Oh, God, it's devastating to me that that's true. I'm not kidding. It's like Cirque du Soleil level good. But add to a Cirque, imagine a Cirque du Soleil piece, the magic and the physicality and the music and the visual stimulation blended with like the first person you've ever seen direct Chekhov in a way where, oh, that's Chekhov.
It makes sense and I'm engaged.
Exactly. It's hilarious. It's tragic. You're laughing and then you're sobbing and then you're laughing and then you're sobbing. And I care about every single character. Every moment was attended to with the most elegant detail. every transition is choreographed within an inch of its life. There are these dream ballets that happen. Like there'll be a moment that isn't in the script where a character looks at another character and they freeze. The lights change and they go into a dream ballet that articulates the feeling they're having in that one moment when they look at each other. There's like six of those and they're all good. There's like wind effects. There's fucking fall leaves that fall. There's a full backdrop that flies into the sky. There's a fucking trombone concert at the end. Characters dress like carnival people.
They're singing Talking Head songs in Russian.
Yes. And doing dances to it. And Rami, I mean, I don't know what to, I'm like, Rami is hot in this play. Hot. I want to have sexual congress with Rami in this play. And I'm not all that gay. I'm a little bit gay. I'm a little into people of the, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody's parts are ever again. Rami is the hottest human that's ever lived in this play. Really? I mean, I don't actually want to have sex with Rami, but you get my point. Rami was like emanating sexual fucking sensuality and romance and love and just like the kind of sex where you're like well cared for.
Good aftercare.
Oh my God. And the acting, everybody's perfectly cast. Perfectly.
That's so great.
Cast. It was a delight. And then Rami's friend, James, was there and I ended up giving them a ride home. And like, we were bonding about how rare it is to come away, you know, as an actor, an inside theater person from a theater show and have nothing to complain about.
And to be elated.
Elated. I was dazzled. I was elated. Anna Ishida is amazing in it.
Anna was born to do Chekhov. That is true.
She was also perfectly cast and brought whatever she brought to that role was like, I didn't even know that role needed that. And now I can't ever see it again without that in it. It, you know, it was, yeah.
I'm really crushed that I can't see this show. It's the worst because it literally closes on my opening.
Ugh.
Oh.
Like otherwise I'd be tempted to literally catch a plane at midnight on Saturday and fly out for a Sunday performance. If they were doing a Sunday performance, I'd take a red eye and get to New Jersey, but I can't.
Yep. So it's really just a very stunning, wonderful piece of theater. So that's a thing that happened.
Just while we're on Rami, Rami's rules, fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like
good.
It's
new feature.
They're just so great. It's just one of the, like, whenever I find a place to slip that in every week, it's a gift to me to listen to a quick little Rami induction into the podcast. And I love it.
I would like to take that soundbite and take it out of context and just say, when I can take a little moment to slip it in, it's a gift to me.
That's what I heard too. That's all I remember from what he just said.
We both got distracted with a shiny sexual joke.
Yeah.
What? Did you say slip it in?
I'm so glad that it's working. I'm so glad that Rami's doing that too. I think it's great.
Hello, Rami here. So there comes a time in the rehearsal process of a play when you move from the rehearsal room to the theater. And then you have about a week of tech rehearsals. And leading up to tech week, if you identify as non-binary, the theater company might reach out to you and say something like, hey, by the way, we've only got two dressing rooms. Sometimes that's not true. Sometimes they have a whole bunch of smaller dressing rooms. But anyway, in this case, they have two large dressing rooms. We've assigned one to male identifying people and one to female identifying people. Which one would you be more comfortable in? And also, we have a curtain that we can put around your station. So, I hate all of this. I hate it all. I hate it all. For one thing, I hate being divided up by gender. It just hurts. I just hate it. It's sort of my whole thing. I hate that. I don't know why I hate it. It's just part of who I am. But it really, really bothers me. That is the main reason that I identify as non-binary, let's just say. So like, and also we've been together for, you know, weeks, and all of a sudden half of your friends go somewhere else. And who you end up being next to for the rest of the time is semi-arbitrarily chosen due to not who you feel an affinity with, but like what your sex is. So anyway, and it doesn't have to be a big deal. It's usually not. I'm like, I'm fine in the women's dressing room. It's no big deal. Anyway, but this particular time I was like, well, since you asked which one I would be more comfortable in, and then you also asked me if you have any comments or questions, I would love to hear them. I do, actually. Like, which dressing would I be more comfortable in? Me, Rami? And my experience is my own. And it, I do not speak for any other genderqueer and non-binary folks out there. There's a million different stories and a million different sets of experiences and needs. But in my particular case, I would be quite comfortable in either of those dressing rooms. I was raised by hippies, and I am so used to nudity, everyone's nudity, my own and all other people. But so because I would truly be comfortable in either of these dressing rooms, the question becomes, where would other people be more comfortable having me, right? So now what I'm being asked to do is make a decision for other people's comfort. And I can do that. I'll just be in the women's dressing room. As long as you understand that it hurts, and it's not at all if, like, the whole situation is, if you're trying to actually respect what my gender identity is, this whole question's fucked up. Since my whole gender identity is based on the fact that I really hate being divided up by gender. Rami's rules.
Okay, two more things. A couple more, just to be, let's, because it's relevant. One, I've been seeing a lot of homes, houses, apartments, and condos in the area because my lease is coming up in September. And I've decided that I want to move into a situation where I can save money to buy a house. So it's like a big new thing in my world. It's never
so been a cheaper before. Rent is what you're looking for.
I need cheaper rent so I can save money and buy a house. But what I keep doing is torturing myself by seeing amazing houses for rent that are not going to save me any money, but that I could afford. And they have these like stunning backyards that lead to a creek with rivers and, you know, birds and the huge trees and 6-3 stories and vaulted ceilings. And I'm like, why are you doing this to yourself? That's a thing. Healing classes are really profound and great right now. And the last two things are kind of big topics. Update is that, did I tell you guys I got the final ruling on his hearing?
I think you did, but update us real quick.
Well, so he has to pay me $5,333.
In damages?
In restitution, I guess it's called, for having stalked me in Colorado. And he is, the first two payments came. So I'm like getting money in the fucking mail from a douchebag who scared me within an inch of my life. And it's, I have to tell you, it's pretty great. And that happened because I, in very 8 Enneagram style, literally bullied the police and the sheriffs in 3 different counties into doing their jobs, which they were not doing.
Yeah.
But I had to make them do it. And then when I made them do it, I got to win this thing. And I'm saying this for all women listening. When fucking nobody present, company excluded, of course, but when men who are ill and toxic and terrible do scary shit to you that scares you within an inch of your life, which is precisely how I felt, you do not have to collapse into a ball and hide and not stand up. You can say to the fucking world, this is not okay. I made big, scary white men do their jobs. Scary white men, not white men like you guys. Scary ones with hats.
You don't need to cover us. We're both fine. We can hear about white men.
It was really a lot of really having to get loud and strong inside of the police and court system in a way that, like, everybody hated me. And I had to be like, you can hate me. I'm not fucking being fucking stalked anymore. And you're going to do your fucking job. And so they did. And this guy went to jail for a little bit. He has to go to 24 months of domestic violence classes. He's wearing a ankle bracelet thing. He had home jail, and he has to pay my ass $5,333, which I wish were like, it should be like 50, but we're going to be grateful for our five. So that happened and the money came. It's starting. It's slow. It's little bits, but it feels good.
Are you doing something special with this money? Like, are you taking Katie out to a nice dinner to treat her well with this money?
Really sweet. It's so lame what I'm doing.
Buying a new microphone.
No, that's a good idea. No, it's that I have a one particular debt that I'm just paying with it.
That's taken care of, Katie.
Yeah, it's practical, smart. It's just going to go right to this lady who I owe $5,000 to. It was kind of amazing, actually. She hit me up and was like, hey, so about that. And I was like, good point. I'm going to start paying you. And then this thing happened. And I was like, I'm going to have no problem.
Wait, did you stalk her?
Did he have any previous? Did he do this previously or did he just meet you and go down a bad rabbit hole?
No, I think he has a history of some cuckoo banana stuff. Nothing of this level, I don't think. But he had told me some things that had gone on between himself and some women that I was like, eek, I have to break up with you because I hope you won't harass me and terrify me. Oh, wait, you did after I broke up with you. Also, he punched a tall glass wall at his current or previous chef job, punched it, shattered it, like he was in the middle of a disagreement with his boss and shattered a glass wall and then had to go to jail overnight, I think, because the cops came. And so he has some issues in a big way.
Clearly, yeah.
Anyway, last thing, two things, swear to God. I am more of a wizard now.
Okay.
And I, it's a lot to, I'm processing it. There's more wizardry and my guy and I broke up.
I'm sorry. I'm glad you're more of a wizard. And I'm sorry that you had a breakup.
Is it your wizardry that that got in the way of your relationship?
No.
Just ran its course?
No. The short version is, I know now I'm taking all the podcasts to talk about me, but it sucks. We're having a ton of fun. Every time we'd see each other was a lot of fun. It was a lot, very intense energy, but like, I was really starting to learn how to work with it and I was just really enjoying him a lot. But this thing would happen where between times of getting together physically, he would kind of not exist in my life. Like it started out strong with the texting and the calling between hangout times. And then he just sort of started to just not exist to the degree where I'd say, you know, like, hey, are we still meeting tonight? And 8 hours later, he'd be like, oh, my bad. Or how was your gig last night? 12 hours later, hey, how are you, girl? And I'm like, did you see when I asked you how your gig was? Like, so he just like wasn't communicating. So we had to talk about it. We met in person and we had a lovely time in person and everything was good as if there were no problems. And I said, hey, I just got to talk to you about this one thing. I feel like I'm bugging you when I want to talk to you and I'm very excited about you. So it's organic for me to want to talk to you. Does it feel like that to you? Like, what's going on? And he was like, oh yeah, no, it's not about you. And it's my ADD and it's this, it's that, it's work. And he is a busy dude, but like, you know, when you're really into someone, you kind of like find the minutes to say hi. And so it just, something didn't feel right. And I was like, okay, well, I kind of need you to be in touch a little more. He was like, on it, doing it, no problem. I'm going to be so much better. I hate the idea. It makes you feel bad. And the week after that was worse than the week before. Almost no contact. Really started to get very distant. Not a lot to say. And then we got together and it's just like, it was like he was my boyfriend. And I was so confused. So it kind of came to a head where he fully fucked up a bunch of schedule stuff in a way that I was like, you know, I'm the queen of fucking up schedule stuff, but just scroll up one conversation and you'll see, we just said you were coming here tonight. Now you have rehearsal. Like, I don't understand. And he was like, oh, my bad. 1 second. And then never responded for 8 hours.
Oh.
So I lost my mind and I realized at the end of it, I had been sad for like 4 days of like just constantly feeling rejected and feeling like not given a shit about. And I was like, this is not all right. So I left him this I was very proud of myself. Part of why I'm telling the story is like, it's taken a lifetime of work to get to where I could do this. You know, I was clear with him in this voice memo and vulnerable and I didn't attack him or make him wrong. I just said, like, I need you to know I've felt really horrible the last 4 days with how little I'm hearing from you. I don't think you're a bad dude. I don't think this is your intention to make me feel horrible. I just feel horrible. And I think what I'm realizing is I need more than what you can give. If you want to tell me that you can totally start to, if you can fully change this and be like, excited to talk to me organically without feeling pressured, then let's do that. But if not, I can't proceed like this. It's breaking my heart. And then I cried in the voice memo, just like, my heart's broken and I'm sad and I don't want to be sad inside of a relationship. I can be sad and be solo. And, you know, and then, so that was like 7 o'clock on Sunday, no response from him all night. The next morning comes 11 a.m. and he texts me and says, I'm so sorry. I guess I'm not ready to be in another relationship yet because I know I'm doing a bad job of it and I've known it for a while. I hate the idea that this has caused you pain. I feel awful. And I wrote back, totally get it. Thank you for telling me the truth. That's a lot easier for me than you being half in, half out. Take good care. Done. And that's it.
Yeah. It's the ultimately no fault in the sense that like people showed up with their best self and they didn't quite match up. It sounds like, you know, except for in person, but that's its own thing.
I mean, I don't even know about best self, but I know that like, that's all he can do right now. And it doesn't work for me.
Right. That's what I mean.
Right. And I'm not even like, what a dick. I'm just sort of like, it was killing me. It was just breaking my heart.
Yeah.
And one of the victories is I probably spent less than 1 minute thinking, am I being too demanding? Do I want too much? Am I too needy? That would have taken me weeks or months in the past to get through. But this time I was like, you know what? I've dated people where my amount of communication is perfect for them. So I'm not all fucked up and neither is he. This just doesn't fucking work. And so I just am so happy that I didn't have a lot of, I'm all fucked up, like judgment of self. I just was like, I love you. I love me. This doesn't work. Bye. So it was like a really good breakup in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel really proud of how I communicated, that I communicated. It was good. And so that was just yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And yesterday I felt kind of elated all day because it felt like I took care of myself. Yay. And then today was the day where I was like, McDonald's drive-through, 10 a.m., must have milkshake, sad, you know, eat the feelings. I did that today. So that's what happened there.
Yeah.
You guys aren't saying a lot of words about it.
I was just hit with your last comment about eating the feelings. I've been eating. One of the things I forgot to mention that happened since the last time we talked, I'm off caffeine.
Oh, my.
How long?
About 2.5-3 months.
What?
Yeah.
You're the wizard.
Well.
How did you do this? Tell us of your magic spells.
Are you smoking more? Is that why?
I wasn't right away. I didn't immediately go to the cigars. I just had to free myself from cigars again because I went on a camping trip that I do most years that usually involves a lot of cigar smoking, and that's fine. It belongs there. But in preparation for that, I was like, ooh, I'm going to order a bunch of cigars for that trip. And so then I had, you know, a month before I left for this trip, I had all these cigars sitting around. So I started a little bit early. It lasted a little bit long. But for like a good month and a half, 2 months, it was just no caffeine. And it's just that like so in 4 years, I've quit smoking pot. I've quit drinking alcohol. You know, nicotine comes and goes, but for the most part, I've quit nicotine. And then I've got put on Zoloft and then I quit. So like, as I peel away these layers, the next layer that's affecting my emotions becomes more and more obvious.
Totally get that.
And so immediately after quitting nicotine, it's like, fuck.
Caffeine.
After quitting caffeine, I was like, fuck, sugar's going to have to be.
That's next.
Next. Like immediately I could, like I would eat a donut and I would feel that. Because when you're drinking caffeine, you don't feel the lull from the donut hangover because you just drink coffee and it's fine. Uh-huh. And now I eat a donut and like.
That's your afternoon. You're gone.
Yes. So it's awesome, but then it's just like, oh, I guess I just got to work on this next fucking layer to peel off. But
rock on.
Ultimately, it feels good.
But what was what happened? Like, what was your bottom with caffeine? Why?
I want to get off the Zoloft eventually. And I know that riding the caffeine wave up and down, like I knew that like the anxiety, not even really anxiety, I get whenever I come off the Zoloft to try to test out to see where I am, it's my patience that suffers.
Okay.
I don't just go into pure anxiety. I don't have attacks, but it's just all of a sudden, you know, Cormac just frustrates me way faster. I get more aggravated with Kelly for dumb reasons.
Okay.
And so then I just kind of like backtracked that. It's like, oh, the caffeine is going in and out of my system. So that's, you know.
It makes you kind of aggro.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. And it's just like every layer I peel off, the more level I get and the more I can control my emotions because I'm always coming at them from the same place. Because, you know, even with something as minor as caffeine, I'm not always managing my emotions from the same place. So it makes them harder to manage.
Interesting. That's fascinating. I have a different experience with it. Like for me, it helps me manage the emotions.
But then what happens when it wears off?
I don't have much of that.
Yeah.
Is that because you just keep reloading?
No, it's like I seem to have hit bottom a while ago with like more than one a day. So I have my espresso in the morning. And then I'll have one, maybe a Diet Coke, but maybe nothing else the rest of the day. And it sort of like gets me invested in giving a fuck about life. I can just like stare at the wall and feel pretty satisfied and peaceful. That doesn't actually work in reality, if you haven't noticed. So like I get invested in life and then I'm going and then and I'm good. And it doesn't, I don't have a huge crash. But where it is not healthy in my reality is if there's a certain amount of emotionality that takes over, like if I'm, like I said, today, I was so sad this morning, just grieving the, like, I had like a boyfriend and I liked it and we were building a little silly life that was fun. And now I just don't have a boyfriend and it's really sad.
Yeah.
So I was like with that sadness and I was with the sadness and then I was with the sadness. And then I was like, I don't want to be with that sadness anymore. So I had a Diet Coke and a fucking milkshake to absolutely medicate the sadness. Absolutely. 100%. It's what I did. I'm not saying do this world. I'm saying it's what I did. And so I'm just and then it brings me to zero. It brings me back up from, you know what I mean?
And once you manage your emotions with it, you can stay up. Then you don't collapse after the caffeine wears off back in.
Not with the caffeine, but I do collapse with the sugar. Like I haven't had a milkshake in forever, but like the sugar wouldn't, I mean, I'll probably nap after we do this podcast because it's terrible. It just, blah. But every now and again, since I'm not doing it a lot, every now and again, it's okay. But like, I don't want to be, it's not a choice I feel great in my body or my soul about. So I identify is what I'm saying.
I think caffeine is my only whatever thing that I put in my body on the regular basis that is like a drug, you know, like I also am not really, me and alcohol are not real buds right now. Weirdly, I have one drink and I have a headache.
Mm.
Any alcohol, beer, whiskey, doesn't matter.
Mm.
So I'm kind of coming and going with alcohol. I'm not all the way off it or anything, but I hardly drank it all before that. But caffeine, I've decided like I get to have one because like yeah. I have a coffee every day and there I will have a headache. If I don't get enough coffee one day, the next day I'll have a headache.
Huh.
Until I get more coffee.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And I never have the headache thing with coffee when I don't drink.
Oh God, that's the thing. If you don't have it for 2 days after having been on it all the time, you don't get a headache. Wow, that's the pretty standard from what I hear.
It's totally standard. That's why, I mean, but what a surprise. I have a different reaction to chemicals. You know, but for me, it's more about my emotions are just so, it's just like I have definition in the emotional center in my chart. So like I'm on a ride all the time. It's not like terrible. It's just a lot. And if just that one espresso gets me where I still feel the feelings, but they're not so much. It's like a little, it sort of medicates it just enough that I'm like, cool, I can do my jobs and I can do my things and still be present to what I'm feeling.
Because it kind of like with the caffeine, everything's, even though I'm running at a little bit higher speed, everything's running at the same speed. And so, like, I wonder if that's what it kind of does for you, that first kick in the morning, like, just gets everything going at the same speed. So your mind and your body are moving.
Yes.
At the same speed, and you can get things done at a progressive.
Yeah. It kind of kickstarts the motor. I don't know.
Because I was, towards the end, I wasn't even like, it's not the first thing I have to have in the morning. Like, I would wake up, take a shower, get ready, start making breakfast and do all this thing. And it wasn't until something frustrated me or upset me that I'm like, give me some fucking coffee. This is fuck this.
Yeah, I don't notice the high anymore unless I have Phil's.
Huh. Oh.
If I have Phil's coffee, I will feel happy.
Like, that's the love. That's the unimaginable amount of love they put into a single cup of coffee.
Exactly. Partially, yeah, it's that I just love the taste, but also it's double packed. I feel like their stuff is hella caffeinated, whatever they're using. Whereas other coffees, it's the physical self of like, I don't want a headache and I'll feel fine if I have coffee.
Wouldn't it be funny if, like, you know, in the way that at a certain point it was revealed that Coca-Cola had cocaine in it?
Oh,
yeah.
Wouldn't it be amazing if in 10 years we learned that this whole time coffee is like crystal methamphetamine?
It has the exact same properties as crystal meth.
Some secret thing about like every bean actually is made up of wizard's tooth, which is actually, yeah.
You're talking about people being different. It's been a long, long time, but I used to love taking a line of cocaine and meditating.
That's
it was like, it was like lucid dreaming.
Wow.
As Katie just said, I'm not saying you should do this. It's just what I did.
What I did. I'll tell you how I'm more of a wizard.
Yeah, I keep waiting to ask you that. I've been like, nope, can't, nope, not yet. Katie, tell us how you're more of a wizard, please.
I shouldn't frame it. I mean, it's clearly not more of a wizard, but so I keep pulling this one card. This is how the cards and I relate to each other. I'll be asking questions about like the boyfriend or the housing situation or just whatever. And when I see a card over and over and over again, I'm like, okay, thank you. You're trying to get me to read this closely. This is everywhere. It's relevant to everything. So in this one deck I have, the one card that keeps coming up is, you are the oracle now.
Oh, shit.
And I keep being like, nah, not really though. What do you mean? No. So the last three clients I've had, I've just been like, I have this feeling I don't need to go in the records anymore. Like, I've talked about this on here before of like this shift into like, I think I can just tap in psychically without them now in a way that I trust is divinely aligned. So the last three clients, they're people I'm really close with because I've been working with them forever. I was like, let's see if I can do the energy work outside the records. And lo and behold, no difference at all. All I have to do is be open like I am, in focus on them, feel what they're saying. It's the same. It's just without the prayer and the thing and the things. And so I'm adjusting to this new reality because it's humbling and also something I'm afraid to, you know, I don't want to be deluded and believe me, if I need the records in any session, I'm going to use them. It's just been really interesting to see that I don't, it seems like.
Well, that matches up with sort of the way you've moved through modalities. And at each point, those modalities were really functioning very well for you.
Right.
And doing a lot of work, like, you know, the weird thing with boys, girls, pod, poc, and all that is, whatever the frick that weird ass thing was. Not to cast judgment or aspersions on it. It just was a weird set of words that you used to say doing a particular type of session. And you don't do that at all anymore, right?
I don't use that phrase. Although every now and again, it'll come through for a client. Like everything I've ever done is now embedded into my field.
Exactly.
So that like whoever it's relevant for, if right, wrong, good, bad is relevant, we'll do that.
Yeah.
But I don't decide that. It just comes out of my face.
It's so similar to like what I tell people about like acting school or going to graduate school for acting. It's like, A, when you first finish, you're going to kind of suck because you're going to have all these teachers and modalities in your head
right. That
are going to be telling you how to do it. But gradually, you're just going to slowly just integrate all that into the thing that is you. And you might not say, I am doing my intentions and tactics and scoring my script right now. That's an acting thing, people. Don't worry about it. Look it up. But you're still doing it. You are doing intentions and tactics. You're just not writing it out individually in the margins of your script. I think of it as like, this is the metaphor I'm seeing. Like there's a door with a complicated lock, handle. And usually to open that door, you have to like grab the handle, turn it down, turn it up, pull it back, turn it up, flip it over, turn it back, turn it down twice. Then the door will open because it's a complicated lock.
Yeah.
And you're still doing that, but you're doing it so naturally. You don't need to go up, down, over, over, up, up, down, down, up. You're just going up, down, down, up, and you just open the door.
Yeah.
You just reach the knob and you just open the door. Is that a good metaphor?
It's almost like.
I like it.
There's no doorknob now.
First, there was a doorknob. Then there was no doorknob. Then there was.
I just pushed the door open and it's fine.
So by doing this so many times, you finally just wore out the doorknob and it just came off in your hand.
That's it. It came off my hand and I threw it in the garbage. I don't know. It's a trip. So, you know, it remains very important that I be, you know, always in service to the light and always bowed and it can't, you know. But that is such an organic state for me when I go into this work that like, I trust myself, you know, that I'm not gonna, I mean, I don't have the power in and of myself to just like do wizard shit at you. I have to open and receive for it to work. So if it's working, that means it's correct because it's not me willing a thing to happen.
Well, how does that affect the theatrics of our podcast?
I think it makes Desmond's editing job easier.
He doesn't have to put that ethereal music behind your prayer, except for when you do have to do the prayer.
Well, that is the prayer now because the music plays through the whole reading portion. So
that's true.
So Katie might have to say, start prayer music now.
Okay, top of the records of yep. Okay, here we are.
I love it.
Oh, and I guess it's too late now, but I wanted to be fully present for this situation.
Yeah.
I smoked yesterday and I'm on Dayquil right now. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry you have to deal with that.
Smoked what?
A cigar.
Oh, that's nothing. By the way, can we just applaud you for actually giving up weed?
That's big.
Really, seriously, that's like such a big deal.
Yeah.
People have so much resistance to it and so much judgment about it's not illegal. It's good for you. And they just forever, never stop. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think you're amazing. That's not an easy thing to do.
Thank you. Like I said, every layer I've peeled back has done nothing but benefit me, so.
Yeah. Well, so if you close your eyes for just a second. Oh, God. And you feel into your center of your chest. The heart chakra, right? Are you stressed? Are you tight? Like, where is it tight and holding? Is it anxiety? Is it stress? What is it?
I'm a little tight in my chest. I just, I had a good therapy session yesterday. Like, I really am kind of at a peak of, like, my life just really took off and I was just being dragged behind it for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of all came to a head yesterday, and I'm in the process of getting back ahead of life and being prepared for what's coming instead of just reacting to it. So I'm a little bit tight still just from the last couple weeks, but it's not super anxious or super tight.
Okay, part of what I'm present to is the Dayquil. What did you take it for? Why did you take it?
I had to take NyQuil last night. Yesterday I got a little bit of what Cormac had and I was a little bit sick, and so I took a bunch of NyQuil just to pass out, which then means I needed to kind of wake up to kickstart myself this morning.
all I could tell you is that is being cleared out of your system right now. We're kind of clearing the NyQuil and the DayQuil, but I think you'll need to tell me to stop if you want to stop it.
No, if I need any... No, I don't need it right now.
So it wasn't to manage any sickness symptoms?
It was.
Today?
Today, no, I wasn't feeling exceptionally sick. I was just feeling a little groggy from the NyQuil knocking me out.
I see. Okay, just give me a moment here, because it's like I can't find you yet because I'm dealing with the DayQuil. So we're just going to titrate that out. Oh my God. Whew. It's kind of like anything causing fogginess or separation between Desmond and Desmond is being met with the light that then allows you to be more intimately connected with self. Okay. Okay. This is a tricky one. This has been coming up a bunch with one of my students in one of my classes where she's had such serious stuff in her life that she's on a lot of medication, and the medication makes it almost impossible to get into the field and do any good. Like I kind of like, it's like hitting a brick wall. And so I do my best, and then we keep having the talk about what the medication is doing, but like, I'm not gonna tell a person to not take their medication. You know, that we're talking about like psych meds, you know? So in her case, she's just, I've been where she is. It's just that we're different people. And my point of view was like, how do I get this out of my body as fast as possible? And her point of view is, this is making things not terrible. No way I'm ever stopping. And I'm like, I don't think I can actually help you too much beyond that, because, and that's great. Maybe just do that for a few years, you know, because it's working. Anyway, it's a real topic that is tricky business in the trauma healing conversation, you know, and everybody needs to do what everybody needs to do. Okay, that's a lot better. All right, so what's your question, Des?
I would like to know how important it is in this lifetime to work with the light as much as possible. Like, I feel like in this lifetime, I'm aware of the light. I get it. I'm open to it. And part of me just wants to enjoy being adjacent to the light.
Yeah.
But I also don't know how important it is for me to embrace this lifetime that I have the opportunity to go deep into it.
Cool. Okay. That's really cool. Right now, there's this no energy on, is it important to embrace the light for you? No. It's just not a priority. It's not what this lifetime is about. It's not that big a deal. And then when you say, but I'm going to come back to that in a second because there's more there. Then when you say you're enjoying being light adjacent, that's a big yes. There's like a lot of light on that energy. Like, so that's like, you know, good for you. Yay for that. So I'm just going to ask, so are we saying that, like, is Desmond going to miss out on anything important in this lifetime by not pursuing more light? No. Is Desmond going to miss out on any of his fulfillment or his soul purpose by not doing that? No. Okay. Is the light really much at all to do with his trajectory? Yes. In the following way. In the sense that which brings a person joy is that, like, so when you say I'm much happier leaning into, you know, being light adjacent, that happiness is the light. So there you are in the light. Give me a second. In your case, it's more like learning how to work with the emotional body, you know, as you experience it, learning how to process your feelings, learning how to own them as they're happening, which is, by the way, obviously, or maybe not obviously, what you're going to get to do by eliminating all these external chemicals, that would be a very useful endeavor to mess with for 5 to 10 years. Like, you're going to be on that ride of like, what am I so upset about? What's it really about? What is the vulnerability under this frustration? What am I afraid isn't going to happen? Can I surrender to the possibility that maybe it won't happen? And if it doesn't happen, am I okay? Examining it with the mind and practicing letting things go, naming the vulnerability that's underneath a reactive first response, these are useful spiritual practices for you. And that's plenty of work to do, quote, quote. In the meantime, it's like, we wish for you more joy just in what is joyful. Just more joy. Like, whatever brings you joy and love and connection and community and happiness, just more of that. Hold on. Now there's a no. Are you thinking of a question in your head?
Not of a question, just a, you know, things like you said, about 10 years. And that's basically when Cormac graduates. And I have been, you know, for anyone out there who doesn't know, these boys are adopted. We adopted them 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And the life lessons, the patience, the, you know, all the things that people say children bring to them, they have brought to me. Mm. And those lessons are going to continue, I mean, way beyond Cormac's graduation. But, you know, that's in about 10 years he graduates, and I feel like I'm going to graduate with him, you know.
Yeah.
To the next level of life.
That's nice. That reads. Sorry, there's just something they're giving me a no on from something I said to you. So let me just check in on that. It's like, the sentence I said was something like, it's about more joy. That's a yes. And then connection, community. That's the part that's maybe not a yes. So let me be clear. What do you mean by that? Okay. It's like with you, you know, they're like, don't assume that connection and community is what brings him joy. Because sometimes it's really not that. I think you have a bunch of individual circuitry in your human design. That's what I'm getting now. And what that means is what's going to bring you joy is going to be very specific to you and probably pretty damn idiosyncratic. You know, it's not always about like togetherness and community and connecting. It's about idiosyncratic interests that you hone in on and get a lot of pleasure out of. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just like to mention that when I saw Everything Everywhere All of the Time, I went to a double feature alone.
Yeah.
And it's, when I get a chance to do that, it's one of the greatest experiences I have.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, rock on. Okay, cool.
Because I've, you know, part of this makes me feel, you know, selfish, but I've been blessed with great friends, great family, great everything. And so I don't crave it. I don't have to get out there and dig up friends. You know, I see my friends regularly enough. I get to do these podcasts with great people.
Yeah.
And so it's not something I need to aspire towards.
That makes a ton of sense. All right. Anything else you want to ask or look at?
Not for me. I do have a question in a little bit different direction, not so much directed at me, just while I have you here.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I have been watching a lot of Ancient Aliens. And for one thing, they had a great episode on the Akashic Records in general, which is kind of separate to what I'm asking, but I just thought that was interesting that they tackled that subject in a scientific way and were very, very gentle towards it in a scientific way.
Mm.
But I, and maybe we've covered this before, because I know we've talked about stuff like this, but was the human population jump-started from alien influence?
Oh, that's such a yes. I can barely handle being in this. I mean, like, wow. Yes.
Is it just showing us stuff, or was it genetically, were we genetically influenced?
Okay, there's something incorrect about the words in that sentence.
Okay.
Can you ask that a different way?
Did non-earthly beings?
Yes.
Mix with our primordial ooze.
Oh, I see. Our primordial ooze.
Do we current humans contain alien DNA?
Oh,
there you go.
Non-earth generated DNA.
Okay, that's a yes. Earth generated is interesting because remember, if you're sitting on Mars, we're the aliens.
Right. That's why we're trying to say not alien.
Yeah. What does alien mean? It just means like, right, not of this planet originally.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, then we're getting into the nature of reality because, like, this planet isn't from this planet originally.
Yeah.
It is all coalesced from the same original whatever.
Exactly.
Because everything is everywhere all at once.
Yeah, which it is. Yeah, so keep going, Desmond. What else?
Were these beings that you know, jump-started us, are they still... Are they of the physical realm? Are they still out there? Could we possibly, I know it's a lot of questions, but could we possibly come in contact with them again?
The specific ones that blended with us at the beginning?
Yes.
Are those specific aliens like here on Earth, you're asking?
No, would they, are they a physical beings that we could possibly interact with physically? And do they have the capability of returning at some point?
Okay, there's so many questions inside of those questions. My head keeps going left, right, left, right, left, right. Because there's a piece, little pieces of yes, no, inside of all the things you're saying. So I'm gonna break it down, okay? The original other beings that this current incarnation of human is a blend of, do those other beings exist anywhere else now? Yes. Do they exist in a physical form like ours? No. Did they ever exist in a physical form like ours? Not exactly. They were never exactly like us anyway. They were a different kind of deal. Okay, hold on though. This is really interesting. Could we make contact with them? Absolutely. Do they already make contact with us all the time? Do we make contact with them? The ones who can, yes. The ones who choose to, yes. Is this connected, this is my question, with the rave stuff? No, okay, great, different thing. What are they called, Desmond? What, do you remember which guys this, are they the reptilians, the grays, the?
I was just trying to think of that before you asked me. I can't, recall right now which ones they mentioned the most.
Well, okay, so that's those answers. What else? Does that answer what you were asking?
Yes.
Okay. Remember, beings that exist beyond, you could say, 3D density reality, the way you experience reality, those beings, you can be in contact with them right now if you want, just by saying, in the same way that they teach people to talk with angels, what you do to talk with angels, right, is you feel into your heart. You say, hey, are there any angels here? Hi, angels. Like, could I talk to you? And they go, sure. And they're all just right here, available to chit-chat, just in another kind of state of being. And what you do as an individual human being is you, or what one could do is soften your heart enough, open your energy field enough that you could perceive what the angels are saying in response, right? The angels, that doesn't, just because you can't hear what the angels say doesn't mean they're not standing right next to you screaming, except that angels don't scream. So similarly with aliens, you know, what we call aliens, like we're so earthocentric. But anyway, what we
absolutely,
you know, it's like, ugh. Anyway, but with those guys, they don't need to do like, oh, I'm in one location in time space in a physical form and it's dense and it's separate from the thing next to it. So, you know, they don't need to do that. So they can like be, you can chat with them any old time because you
can. I'm so sorry.
No.
The Anunnaki race.
The Anunnaki. Right. Is that them? Yeah, that's the ones we're talking about.
Okay.
Yes. But also something else. Are the Anunnaki the ones that Desmond's asking about? Yes. Are the Anunnaki the ones that we blended with and then da-da-da? Yes. We can talk to them? Yes. They don't exist in physical form? Yes. Okay, great. What is this butt energy? Is there a butt energy? Do you want to add to that? No. Okay. Is there another race? Oh, that's what it is. So it wasn't just the Anunnaki. The Greys were involved. All the star nations, the Pleiadians, the Sirians, the Lyrans, the Arcturians, the ones from Orion, the Mintakans. So in a way, when Earth was formed, and they're pointing me to, what is that called? There's a show on Gaia, not the one you're talking about, the other one. Initiation on Gaia. They're like, watch that and get all your questions answered. It's with, what's his name? A guy who remembered all time and space. I can't think of his name. Anyway, it's a good show to watch to answer all these questions. Okay, so when Earth was formed, you know, many star nations had an impact and an influence on the development of the human form. The Anunnaki were more aggressive and more actively involved in a front-footed, forward-leaning kind of way, as were the Greys and the Reptilians, believe it or not. They really would like you, Desmond, to watch Initiation with, what is his name? Can you Google it?
I can.
Oh, Matthias De Santo. Matthias?
Yes, De Stefano.
De Stefano, thank you. Yeah, I think you'll like it a lot. And I think there's activation in there for you too. Like there's something you'll get out of it that's more than just knowledge or whatever. So. Okay. Does that answer that? Other questions?
I feel great. I'm good.
Okay. I'm curious, what has you watching Ancient Aliens? What pulls you in about it?
I'm it's just one of those shows that it answers a lot of questions if you're just open to it. Like, you know, if you watch it super skeptically, it's crap. If you watch it like it's all pure fact, it's, you know, it'll just shake your humanity to the core. But if you just watch it with an open mind, and it's just it's a show I've kind of watched now and again before, and I've just been really into it lately because it's kind of been running in the background. And, you know, I just have always, my biggest thing is anyone who thinks that Earthlings are the only living thing in the universe is, you're insane if you think that.
Yeah.
And so just opening up beyond that reality.
Yeah.
And on top of it, I found I really, really like sleeping to it. It's a really calming show. The narrator is very even. All the talking heads are very even.
That's cool.
And so that's doubled the amount of time that I've listened to it in the past couple of weeks.
Very fun. Love it. So then I'm just going to ask here, consciousness, God, his guides, angels, whoever, do you have any other info for Desmond? Yes. Okay. You know, you in particular, there's something about your makeup that when you prioritize having fun and feeling fulfilled, you are bringing more light to the planet. You are a light worker just by doing that. Nothing further is required except that you feel fulfilled and satisfied and content with what you're doing with your time. It's not about outcomes. It's not about money. It's not about savings accounts. That's what it's about with you. And in so doing, you kind of light up the neighborhood. You're like a meteorite of light when you're in your joy and your fulfillment. It's enough. It's more than enough. Part of what gets you frustrated is, you know, on a certain level, almost in every moment, I could be doing something that would light me up right now. Instead, I'm doing this. Does that resonate?
Yes.
Yeah. And so there's a way that, like, the human design language would be something like, everything that people judge you for, you're so selfish. Lean into it. Yeah, pretty selfish. I like to do all my little things I like to do. Because what humanity has had backwards this entire fucking time is that you're somehow supposed, that martyring yourself for other people is righteous. Now, let us be clear. There are some beings, Cassidy, you're more of one of these. There are several of your friends, Cassidy in particular, are more of this type of being, where the light, you know, you are communal, you are collective, you are to, what is it, do for the tribe. But some are not to do for the tribe. There is no one thing, you know? So the light is activated more fully for the collective and the tribe when Cassidy is a bit more tribalist, collectivist, right? But not you. The light is activated. You're like a, this is how they showed it to me, if it's gonna make any sense. It's like the right side of your body was holding the idea that I should be talking to the light more. Like a should I be being more spiritual over here on the right side of your body? Then the left side was this big open panel of light. And I was asking internally, like, what is that? Why is that open over there? Why is it so light? And it was like, this is the part of him that leans into his joy. And then as soon as I was asking, when I said, do you have anything you want to share with Desmond? They showed me this side, the flap on the right side coming down, and all the light from the left side flipping over, like if you were to open a book fully flat on a table, and then all the pages spread left and right. The light did that. It went left to right. So now there's light on the right side of you in place of the idea that you should be in some spiritual way activating the light or being with the light, right? And what it is it's permission to be more selfish. Now, of course, not in a way that harms people or closes your heart to people, or we're not talking about narcissism. We're not talking about shutting your family out. We're not talking about any of that. You know, you have a heart that functions and you know what people need, and hallelujah. And you need more time to yourself to do your things you like doing, because the light is amplified on this planet when you do. And that is not a typical perspective. And you will not hear that, certainly in any of the fucking religious contexts. You'll hear do more for others, which for you would be the most codependent, disempowering, sort of like light diminishing choice you could make. And if you were inclined, Desmond, to look back over your life and look over or explore the idea of what were the choices I made that dimmed the light for me? When did I feel most down? When was I most underwater with heaviness, the weight of existence? We would purport that you could discover underneath each of those times was some codependent enmeshment. I should be more like this. And then trying to be that way and then feeling miserable.
Yep.
Awesome.
I just want to say that I had a great therapy session with my therapist yesterday. And I always... especially this last couple months, one of the biggest reasons I've been smoking cigars is it's the most selfish thing that I can do. It's self-destructive. I have to hide it from, I mean, Kelly knows I smoke cigars, but I don't do it in front of her. I don't want the kids to see me do it. So I just go hide and be alone and be selfish, my cigars. And then...
Yeah. So if you were to do the things you have habits, fun obsessions with that don't cause mouth cancer, you know, feel free to be as selfish as you want, just maybe in a way that doesn't, you know, harm your body. But in other words, this is encouragement from the universe. Like this is strong leaning into those individual circuits. Individual circuitry in human design is not collective, and it is not tribal. It's a different thing. It's very what it is. It's like the ultimate energy of the artist, the sort of like, you could say, what's the word? The image humans have of what the artist is, the like loner weirdo who has to be so true to himself, and he Jackson Pollocks himself into a corner and makes the most amazing art. But it's also a real thing. Jackson Pollock was that way because he had a ton of individual circuitry. There are people like that. And then there are people not like that. Does this make any sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. Sweet.
Thank you.
My pleasure. It's a treat to be with your field once we got through that fucking date. Oh, nice. The flipping open experience is so nice because it's just really nice. Feels really good. Hey, Cass, do you have any questions?
You mean about me or about Desmond? We could ask about why I've been getting a headache every single morning.
Yeah, okay, let's do it.
If there's any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Did I miss anything for you, Des, before we close you out?
Not at all. I am handled.
Dirty. Okay.
And we are at about an hour and a half now, so we could, you know, we could still do me, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just... Desmond... What was it? McNeese? Desmond?
Paul.
McNeese. We'll just send his energy back to him. And we're going to Cassidy Jamal Jackson, Malcolm Jamal Warner Brown it.
And I feel like if you say that name, it still gets, because that's who you see me as. So that's, you're getting to the right person in the address book.
Yeah. Can we tap into the records of Cass and Jamal Brown? Yes. Okay. So the soul alignment, just feeling into you a little bit here. Okay. All right. So headaches. We have some insight from conscious awareness about his headaches. What's going on with the headaches?
They're not pounding headaches. They're just, they're there.
What does it feel like in the morning?
Front of head, just a dull, not even throbbing, just like a, oh, I have a headache. It almost feels like a really mild hangover. And it happens if I drink or not.
Okay. Okay, so these headaches for Cassidy Jamal Brown, is this happening stress, hormones, food he's drinking, food he's eating, food he's not eating? Does he need a supplement? Is it allergies? Oh, okay. It seems some kind of allergy. Okay, is it in addition to an allergy? No. Is it pollen? Yes. Well, that's interesting. Is it something other than pollen? No. Is there something new blooming? Are you in an area where there's a tree you don't usually deal with?
It's been happening for a few weeks now, and I've been in two different locations. I've been at home and I've been out in Livermore, so.
Well, it is springtime, right? So I mean.
Yeah.
I guess almost, it's pretty much summer. Is it summer?
It's summer. Well, as of today.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Today's the 21st.
Oh, I never know when that is. Okay, 21st of June. Now I know. Give me a second. This is interesting because this came up with Rami recently too. They were having a thing on their tongue and I got that it was a pollen related thing from where they were staying in Red Bank. And then it was like a very specific, go to the store and muscle test these things. Anyway.
Yeah.
So let me see. Is there anything he can take that will help? Yes. Claritin.
Well, I take a daily an antihistamine.
Right. Do you take?
I forget which one Claritin is. They all have a different chemical makeup, all the different brands, but I can look up Claritin. If Claritin is loratadine, we could talk about that because that makes me insane.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh at you.
No, but it's a weird thing. Let me see. Claritin is.
You're looking it up.
Yeah.
It is loratadine.
Is Claritin loratadine?
Yes.
Well, I have a history. Maybe we can ask about this. I used to take loratadine daily, and with all these, this type of allergy, you have to take it every day, you have to have it in your system. They aren't reactive. You build it up.
Right.
As resistance. And I was having my like weird panic attacky, middle of the night heart palpitations, whoompty whoomp thing. And it was happening a lot. And then I happened upon like a message board of all these people describing a loratadine reaction specifically.
Wow.
That mirrored mine exactly. Like a bunch of people saying, yeah, this shit makes you crazy. Like it makes you feel insane.
Wow.
And I switched to a different, I'm taking cetirizine hydrochloride, which is, I don't know what the trade name of that one is, but you know, it's Zyrtec or whatever.
Yeah.
And totally overnight changed.
Right.
So I would love to know if they were just saying Claritin as a generic idea, or if they were saying, no, you need to take loratadine.
It was Claritin specifically. But let me feel into this because I hear that we don't want to fuck you up. All right. So will he stop having the headaches if he takes specifically Claritin? Yes. Does he need it for a long time? No. Take it for 8 to 10 days, 7 to 8 to 10 days. Does he stop taking the other thing he's taking? What's the other thing?
Cetirizine hydrochloride.
Is he going to stop taking that? No. Okay, so keep taking that.
Well, oh, but just add loratadine to it.
Taking the Claritin. Yes, big yes. And you're not going to need it for long, 7 to 10 days.
Okay.
You know what you could do is just try it one day.
Yeah.
You know.
If after 3 days I start having palpitations, I'll stop.
But... yeah, there you go. Also, let me see here. Take like half of what they tell you to take.
Well, they're already microscopic pills, one a day.
Still, take half of it.
Take a half a microscopic pill. Yeah. I'll do my best.
Well, I mean, I've taken those Claritins. They're really strong.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how small it is. It's still strong. So you can cut those in half with a little knife, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me see. Hold on. Okay. Anything else he can do for this? No. Lots of water would be good. A lot of water. Like way more water than you're having.
Yeah.
A lot more water than you're having.
Yeah.
Try to aim for 3 liters a day.
Okay.
Particularly with what you're doing right now with the stress.
Yeah. And being outdoors in the heat.
Yeah. Anything else? Okay. What? Anything else?
I just drank a bunch of water.
Anything else you want to ask, Cass?
I mean, since we're on that subject.
Yeah.
Is there any acknowledgement of... how loratadine at least used to affect me?
Is there any acknowledgement of it?
Like, was I right that it was loratadine that was making me nuts?
Absolutely. It's a big yes. It's just that A, it's been long enough. B, you're going to do it short term.
Okay.
You're not going to have it in you all the time. And C, like whatever's in that thing does the thing that this particular allergy needs.
Cool. I'll try it.
Your other thing you take does something else for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's worked great. I mean, since I've been on it regularly, I don't have sneezy allergies anymore. And I used to be a hay fever monster.
I got you.
Zyrtec is a miracle drug.
That's the one I take. That's cetirizine hydrochloride, right?
Yeah. Should he take the Claritin at night?
Ooh, yes. Great question. Should I be taking it a particular time a day?
Since you don't need it for allergies, maybe it'll overnight cure the headache.
Interesting thought.
But it is an allergy. It's an allergic reaction.
Right. I mean, they usually don't tell you when to take them because they aren't drowsy inducing.
Yeah, I get the morning.
Okay, so I'll just put it with my morning pills. Cool.
All right. I have to close because I have to teach in 8 minutes.
Oh, yeah. We got to get out of here.
Let me close. Let's see. How do we even fucking do this now? Can you return all of Cassidy Jamal Brown's energy to himself? Return to his complete human wholeness. And Desmond McNeese, Paul McNeese. All right. Is there any records that we have to close? No. So how do I do this?
How do you close a door with no handle?
Close a door with no handle in the woods. Does it make us?
That's like a koan. How do you close a door with no handle?
All right. I adore you guys. I'm so glad you're back, Des. I hope we get to have you more soon. And
yes.
Again,
hopefully I'm going to get in some kind of a routine for the next couple of weeks, at least.
Sounds good.
And then she's probably going to get crazy again in August and September. But
well, we need to hear more reports from you about your fun, idiosyncratic shit you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Report on what good shit you did for yourself fun.
Yes. Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Love you guys.
All right, beautifuls. We'll see you soon.
Do your work.
What are you asking for? All of the answers. Say what? All of the answers. Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Katie, isn't it a relief that it's Desmond that's having?
He's the sound guy.
I hate it.
This is a total relief.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
When I can take a little moment to slip it in, it's a gift to me.